right. Thank you so much, Dr. All right, I think perhaps because we're in the far corner, we're a little technologically cursed in this room. And Dr. Crowder's presentation is now on here, and our mic is now working, so we're making progress. But I do want to introduce Dr. David Crowder from Washington State University to speak with us about evaluating and augmenting pollinator communities in diversified organic farming systems. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the invitation to speak in the symposium. So I'm one of the dreaded entomologists talking in the crop symposium. So it's really nice to be here and have this joint meeting. So today I'm going to be talking, as she said, about pollinator communities and diversified organic systems. I'm probably focusing a lot more on the evaluating than the augmenting. This is a multiple year project of a couple of grad students in my lab that we really just got off the ground a couple summers ago. I would be remiss without recognizing the people that have actually done all the work on this project. So this project is really the brainchild of my PhD student, Eli Bloom, there on the left. And Rachel Olson is a new PhD student in my lab that's kind of worked with Eli and is now taken on a role in this project. And then our collaborator, Bob Redmond, who works with a nonprofit in Seattle and has been really instrumental in helping us get off the ground. So everything I'm going to say today is Eli or Rachel or from Bob. So when we're talking about diversified organic systems, Washington really is a diverse state. That's where we're doing most of our work and is second behind only California in organic farm gate sales. And most of our organic production are actually large-scale monocultures, crops like potatoes and tree fruits. But we do have kind of a large sector and a growing sector, particularly in western Washington, of these diversified organic farms, which might look something like this, where a lot of the growers are putting in flowering plants that they might be able to sell as cut flowers in a mixture of crops that are kind of growing throughout the season, many of which might need pollination from bees. Another sector of farms that we work in are farms, kind of in quotation, are these urban gardens. This is really a growing sector as well, not only in Seattle, which is a big growing metropolitan area, but in any other parts of the country, that people are putting in these community gardens, as you can see here, a really diverse mixture of plants where people are kind of producing food for themselves or maybe local CSAs. So a lot of the farms that we work with are also smallholder farms, just to give you some background. I'm sorry some of this is not in the greatest resolution, but especially in this western Washington area, the vast majority of farms have farm gate sales less than $250,000. So these are smaller farms, which is a big growing sector in the U.S. as kind of the middle-sized farms are kind of being phased out. So in these diversified farming systems of western Washington, we really have a lot of crops that are vicinated and are dependent on pollinators, such as the tree fruit crops, some alfalfa grown for seed, a lot of vegetable crops such as tomatoes and the cucumbers, herbs such as mints. So we really have a diverse mixture of these crops kind of up and down the western border, and we've really been trying to evaluate over the last couple years what are the pollinator communities in these systems and what, if anything, can we do to kind of bring them back or conserve the most effective pollinator communities for these farming systems. One of the kind of central tenets of the presentation today and just our research in general is that bees are really greatly impacted, as we know, by both what a farmer might be doing within his field. So what's the diversity on his farm? Has he put in any kind of augmentation habitat that might promote bees? How many pesticides is he using, such as what we heard in the last talk? And then at the landscape scale, we know within a few kilometers outside of your farm, those habitats can be sources or sinks for your bees. So the context and kind of the landscape context of where your farm is located can be really important. And so when we're working in a lot of these urban systems that kind of go on a gradient out to rural systems, we want to say, as you're gaining more and more natural habitat as we move kind of outward from the city of Seattle or Olympia, what's going on with the bee communities, and do we need to do anything different to kind of conserve those communities in an urban versus a rural environment? So today I'm going to talk about these bee communities, and you might ask, what do we mean by bee communities? So almost all of our farmers do use honeybees, but our main focus is that these other pollinators in these farming systems. So we know that insect pollinators are a really diverse group, and we even have some non-insect pollinators such as hummingbirds, and bats in these systems, but our lab mainly focuses on kind of the other bees, bumblebees, sweat bees, mason bees. It's really a diverse group, as I'll show you. And we've even looked into some of the syrphid flies and butterflies in these systems. And then you might not know, even beetles and some of these other insects can kind of act as pollinators, even if that's not their main function ecologically. They might be passively transmitting pollen back and forth to the plant. So, you know, at kind of these farming systems in Western Washington, they're small. So a lot of honeybees, if you know about honeybee cycles, are going to almonds and the big crops in California in early February and March. And then they're coming up to Washington and they're going to tree fruits. So for a small grower that just has a few acres, it can be difficult to kind of buy commercial hives or rent them out. And they're really largely dependent on these wild bee communities to get their pollination services. So we know from the literature, there hasn't been a ton of studies on this, that pollinator diversity probably matters. This is why we study it in our systems, because the evidence is fairly convincing that the more species you might have here on the x-axis, this is a study from Hone et al. In pumpkins. They see more seeds per fruit. In this particular study, the more kind of different guilds of bees you have, greater fruit set that you're getting. There hasn't been a lot of experimental studies on this idea with bees. Bees are hard to manipulate. People are kind of remiss to put them in an experimental cage and kill them. But there have been some studies out of Europe that have looked in these large kind of 2x4x2 meter cages. And if I vary the diversity of a bee community in terms of the number of species, do I get greater seed production? And the evidence, again, from this kind of experimental study shows that, yes, you do. That in general, we would think the more bee species you have, the more complementary possible interactions you're going to have, and especially in these diversified systems where we're growing a lot of crops that might each depend on different bee species that are active at different times of the year. Especially if we consider that temporal aspect, we would expect that more bee species and greater bee abundance is really important for farming systems. There's also some evidence that pollinator networks can be impacted, that perhaps when you have more bee species, they might tend to specialize and, you know, really kind of that niche partitioning will be realized where bees will be pollinating just the best crops. And that gives the best pollination services overall when bees are acting kind of complementary. So kind of the last slide of kind of introduction stuff. This was a meta-analysis that was in Science a couple years ago and just showed when we have these wild insects present, wild bee species, this is kind of just their metric of pollination or fruit set. We see increases in pollination and fruit set kind of regardless of whether or not honeybees are there. So kind of our impetus with this project is to figure out what are bee communities looking like on organic farms, what, if any, are the practices on the farms that impact them, and then what can we do about it as researchers working with this community of growers. The other aspect in these farming systems as well is that we are growing some crops like tomatoes and blueberries, blueberries in particular that maybe require buzz pollination. This is where the insect is kind of vibrating and kind of pulling pollen out of the flower, and honeybees can't do this very well. So some of the crops actually need these wild pollinators to get any pollination services. All right, and then finally, we have this idea that wild bees might provide insurance. Probably all of you have heard of, you know, colony collapse disorder and declines in kind of Apis mellifera, the honeybee. And maybe if we have wild bees present in these systems, they can make up for any kind of lack of honeybees or kind of declines in honeybees. All right, so this is maybe what one of the farms that we might work in looks like. So this is an urban farm. And as you can see, this particular grower has raspberries going, kind of an early season flowering crop. Sunflower, which is kind of a mid to late season crop, tomatoes, peppers, which are kind of coming out in June and July, beans, squash. So these are not your typical monoculture systems. We have a lot of different crops in a small area. And to get pollination services, obviously the bees have to be visiting these crops and then moving along to other flowers of the same plant species. So we really want to know what's going on in a system like this, because a lot of the research on pollinators comes from kind of large monoculture production systems. So what's going on in a diversified system? And this is a nice area to work because organic produce sales have really been spiking in the Pacific Northwest. And as I said, we have rapid growth in diversified farms in Western Washington. We see a lot of minority farmers and women farmers operating these kind of organic farms. So there's a nice diversity of farmers and farming systems. The key thing here is, unlike kind of these mass-produced monocultures, these operations are producing crops that require pollination pretty much from the start of the season all the way to the end. So we can't just have honeybees or wild bees that kind of in July or something like that. We need these bee communities to be present and fairly stable throughout the year for this farmer to make any money. So our three central questions I'm going to talk about today are, how are the bee communities on these organic farms kind of affected by a gradient from urban to rural? So as we're moving outside of the city where we have in general more natural habitat, are bee communities benefiting? Is there anything that we can do to augment on-farm habitat to increase kind of the health of our bee communities and potentially their pollination services? And then how do we really kind of put the research into action by integrating with growers and other community members that are interested in pollinator conservation or just farming systems in general? How do we work with them to kind of promote the best practices? So I'm going to start with this first question. As I said, a lot of the talk today is going to be more about evaluation than this augmentation question, but we will get to that as well. So we have a network of 24 farms or so. It's actually a little bit higher than that now, where Eli really went out and met with every one of these farmers. So we have kind of a lot of diversity operations where, you know, this one is rotating hogs with their produce system. So we visited each farm. By we, I mean Eli always talked to the farmers about the projects. And we tried to find farms that were similar in a lot of different characteristics so that we could try to match them up across these landscapes. When I talk about augmentation, we were working with different pairs of farms that had similar practices. So all of these farms are less than 25 acres, grow at least 5 plants that require pollination from bees, and they're all kind of in and around the Seattle and Olympia metropolitan areas. So as I said, diversified systems, and we kind of have them set up in clusters, so you can see here some of where the farms are located. So we have kind of a big cluster in and around Seattle, in and around Tacoma, and in and around Olympia. So within each of these areas, we kind of have an urban to rural gradient as you move away from the cities. You know, if you're not familiar with Washington, you start to get into a lot of forested habitat as you move towards the Cascade Mountains there, a little bit east of the big cities. All right, so on every one of these farms, we're looking at all these factors. I know this is a little slide with a lot of stuff, which if you're a student, you should never do. But we have all these factors that we're looking at on these farms that might really matter for the pollinator communities. And, you know, I don't have time today to talk about all the influences of all these factors, but we know things, or we expect that things like crop diversity, plant diversity is going to be positive. You know, maybe as the farm gets larger and kind of the ratio of the farm to the natural habitat gets smaller or bigger, you know, that might negatively influence bees. How old is the farm? How long have they been doing organic practices? Do they have honeybees present? Things like pesticides, what landscape are they managed in? So we're really getting a lot of information from each farm about, you know, either from their organic systems plans or just from working with these growers to try to evaluate down the road what's going on with the bees. So each of these farms in 2014 and 2015, we've sampled them 3 times a year using netting, so just collecting bees off of the flowers directly, as well as some of these passive sampling techniques, just putting out traps and collecting bees passively. You know, so we do all this sampling on days that are warm, sunny, and not too breezy. So Rachel started out as a research assistant in the lab and just loved it so much that she had to do a PhD in the lab. So we got her in the summer, and she was helping Eli kind of assess all these bee communities. We have undergrads that spend nonstop hours just washing and pinning bee specimens, and we have probably at this point, I would say, over 4,000 bee specimens that we're working through identification. All right, so what does it look like? What does a bee community look like on these farms? Well, they're quite diverse, as you might guess. You know, oftentimes people think of agricultural systems sometimes falsely as being not diverse, but we really do have a large diversity of bees. So Here in the kind of the biggest two chunks of the pie are the genus Bombus, which is your bumblebees, and the genus Apis, which includes honeybees and some related species. So those probably, just between those two genera, make up about half of the bees that we find on these organic farming systems. But then we really do have kind of a lot of other species of bees, including Lasioglossum, which is a genera of sweat bee, that are working in these farming systems. So we do know there's a lot of diversity potentially to be conserved and on these different systems. So we also see seasonal patterns of where is diversity the highest. As I said, these farmers are producing crops throughout the season, so we really need them to have good, abundant bee communities, both in the early, mid, and late seasons. This is the different number of genera that we find kind of on average in these different farming systems. And you can see it doesn't change too much. We have kind of an early and, you know, the bee diversity is increasing as we move into the season. And then it falls off late in the season as it starts to get cold and fewer flowering plants. But pretty much on these organic farms, we have a good base of diversity to work with kind of throughout the farming system. All right, I'm not going to really go through this slide too much. These are just our different bee genera. You know, I didn't even put a legend on this. It's just to kind of show you the general patterns where some of them are really increasing in abundance as the season progresses. Some of them seem to be early season specialists and drop off. Some of the species down here, obviously most abundant in the middle season. So this is what we would like to see on these farming systems when we're trying to conserve diversity for a farmer throughout a season. We need these kind of bee species and genera that are present at the end of the year, as well as the ones that are present in the early and the mid-season. So we do see that there is a lot of diversity in these organic farming systems. All right, so what does it look like across space? So I have some more slides that are a clear representation of this. But this is basically a heat map where the dark oranges represent kind of the lowest bee abundance. And then as you move into the yellows, we're increasing. And then as we get into kind of the green areas, we see increasing and increasing abundance. So the pattern is kind of what you might expect, that as you're moving away from these urban centers, where there's more habitat that these farms are embedded in, we're definitely seeing more bees. So the bees in the urban areas, those farmers are a little bit more hard-pressed to kind of find the bees they need to do their pollination services. So if we just look at it, kind of breaking things very simply down into rural versus urban. I have the wrong graph here. This is actually species richness and not abundance. But we do see that, you know, this is the urban areas here that we have kind of the rural areas in the dashed line. We have a few more species in the rural compared to the urban farming systems. All right. The rural areas, we also see kind of patterns in abundance that change over the season. So here on the x-axis, we have the percent urbanization and then kind of the abundance of the bees standardized per each of these traps. And we can see in the early season and the late season, that's when the urban areas really are suffering from a shortage of bees. Kind of in the middle of the season, they have enough species to maybe fill in those gaps, enough species that are adapted to these urban areas, that they're doing okay, but particularly in the early and late season, maybe when the bees are kind of migrating around the landscape a little bit more, this is where we do see problems in the urban areas, that the abundance is just a lot lower than our rural farming systems that are also organic. So clearly there are effects of, if you're an organic farmer, where you're located in the landscape really affects kind of the bees you have to work with that you could potentially conserve for your pollinators. So this was something that was kind of, we've been measuring visitation rates of bees to the different flowers. So we kind of hypothesized that maybe as you move from a rural area to an urban area on an organic farm, maybe the preferences for the bees to visit their plants might change in the landscape context. This is the urban areas over here, and just these bar graphs show kind of five different groups of bees and what they're foraging on. How often are we observing them foraging on these different plant species, which is kind of a mixture of our main crop species like brassicas, cucurbits, legumes, and solanaceous plants, and then a few of kind of our big non-economically important families like the asters. But you can see just from the general patterns here that the bees seem to be foraging kind of on the same crops, I mean, different environments. So there's no kind of change that we can detect in whether or not a bee serves as kind of a specialist or a generalist pollinator across this gradient of landscape. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes the best pollination services are when you have bees that are specializing on particular crops and are acting complementary. And we kind of see these patterns of complementarity and what bees are foraging on are consistent across crop types. So these big dash lines here are the honeybees. So you can see they kind of are making up about 50% of the visits to all these other crops. And the bumblebees are fairly abundant too, but we definitely have variation in if you're a farmer, what crops you're growing, and what bees you really need to conserve to get the best services. All right, so just this is another representation of kind of the same graph, just showing you that certain bees, like green bees, are very specialized on certain plant families, while obviously honeybees and bumblebees are pretty diverse in their foraging preferences. So these are kind of the species that we can potentially conserve if we want to kind of get broad pollination services. And, you know, if we're looking for, you know, services of this part of the pie, maybe we're focusing on green bees. All right, so as I said, our kind of our future objectives, we haven't gotten into this too much. We tried to do this in 2014. It didn't really work. Was measuring pollination services on these farms, trying to relate the abundances and the structure of these bee communities to kind of what are the services these communities are actually providing. So this is kind of to be determined. So the second question, I'm kind of going to run through these last two quickly in the interest of time, but can we really augment on-farm habitat to increase bee community health? So after the first year, we kind of set up these structures on, like I said, the farms were paired in the landscape, and we wanted to say a lot of bees nest above ground in twigs. Can we put out nesting boxes for bees and actually augment these communities and see if we can aid communities, especially maybe in these urban areas? So that's Eli installing one of our bee structures. And we kind of have this paired design of either you received structures or not, and what happened to your community. So you can see the bee here trying to go in and make her nest in this drilled hole. So Eli spent hours and hours and hours just drilling holes. So over the course of 2014, we had about 588 cavities that were completely filled. This is not nearly all of the potential habitat that we put out there. So a lot of these cavities were not filled. And I wanted to just show, these are the different cavity sizes. So it seems that these habitat structures do a really good job of kind of augmenting small bees, but they don't do such a great job at really promoting large populations of the larger bees. So it's still to be determined if this provides a big impact at the community level or how many structures you might actually need, but this is potentially a technique to augment these bee communities. What we're kind of working on now is to pair these nesting structures with flowering plants, strips of flowering plants outside of these fields that will provide nesting and foraging resources for the bees. So that's going to begin next year. And for the soil scientists in the room, we're also kind of trying to put in habitat in the ground and see if this can promote ground nesting bees. Kind of does the diversity of these habitats really, is that what you need to get the optimal bee community in these farming systems? So this is kind of the direction that we're going to try to see what provides the biggest benefits to these communities. I'm just going to skip that. Kind of my final point is, you know, a big part of Eli's research, you know, which he's really taken the initiative on, is to run citizen science courses, train growers. Kind of my reaction to this, you know, as someone that's done extension in agricultural systems, is Eli gets a lot more interest than I ever get. So these are sold-out classes where we're teaching people about bee conservation. And I really think that this is going to be the way to kind of push this forward. We can only do so much as our lab. But we have kind of a huge network of citizen science now that we've trained to do observations on farms. They're going to start supplying us with data at a much larger scale on what do bee communities look like in organic systems across this gradient of landscape. So it's a really nice kind of collaboration with the public where we teach them classes and then we send them on their way, and they can insert kind of observations of their bees on our website pretty soon. And it's a really nice opportunity to kind of combine with the public to achieve good pollinator conservation in organic farms. So I'd just like to thank the really farmers. You know, I know that kind of some of this data is to be determined in the next year or so, but I think we're making good progress just figuring out what bees look like on organic farms and strategies to augment them. And a lot of it's with funding from USDA Organic Transitions Program and then the NSF. So with that, I may have 1 minute for questions or so. Thank you.
David can take a question or two as we transition. I want to make sure David gets his full time. We have a break.
Yes.
I don't know if you mentioned this, but engaging organic insecticide use, too, and just relatively speaking.
We are. Yeah, so we're working with all the farmers, going through the organic systems plans, trying to figure out what pesticides they use, when they use them. A big aspect of this project I didn't even talk about is kind of looking at long-term organic farms versus transitional farms, like if you've been farming organic a long time or you're lower input organic, do you get better bees? I think when we talk to the public, a lot of people think that organic farmers don't use pesticides, but some of them are quite intensive. And so that is something that we're definitely cognizant of. But I don't have the data to show if that matters. There's so many factors going on. We haven't really figured out which of the three or four that matter the most. But that's one of our goals, yeah. Yeah.
Please filter in as we transition speakers as well.
Do you look at maybe some equal resources in the vicinity of your test farms, like the drum trees or blueberry patches?
Yeah, so we've mapped out, we're using kind of satellite imagery and GIS to map out the habitats around all the haunt with some ground truthing, to try to figure out what are kind of the source sink relationships on all these different farms. So that's our goal, and the other way we're doing that is also looking at like the actual pollen that we find on the bee's body to try to figure out what they're foraging on in these different contexts, and to put that together, you know, how is that maybe landscape affecting them? Okay. So,
great.
Thank you very much for your attention.